Over the next year, some 150 kind souls will review the papers here on a Sunday morning. Plenty of others won't, since they'll turn us down, saying they're snorkelling. So good morning to the first of a new year. Welcome back, Anne Widdecombe.
Morning.
Thank you very much. The noise is off, which I'll come to in a minute. Welcome back. The poll this week, or the findings of the Equal Opportunities Commission saying women absent from top jobs, were you worried about that?
Oh, certainly not. No, I'm tired of this regular whinge that comes up. What defines equality is not statistical outcome, it's equality of opportunity. As I've always said to people, when I stood for my first parliamentary seat, there were only 2 out of 50 applicants were women. The second time round, only 6 out of 120, and the third time, only 10 out of nearly 200. So if we come forward in those quantities, we're obviously doing better than the men to get there at all.
Well, does it matter that only 20% or less of people in Parliament are women?
No, I don't think it does matter. I'd rather see more. Of course, I would rather see more. But if the problem is the number of women coming forward, then you've got to rejoice in the choice being made.
So you did see that story this week, I think.
Yeah, so I saw that story.
Stuart Lee is a comedian who co-wrote Jerry Springer the Opera. His new play invites the audience to consider life from the position of Judas Iscariot.
I know.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yes, and thank you for coming. You're in the company of Geoffrey Archer, I see in the papers today.
I know. Well, what a fantastic promotional opportunity for Geoffrey that is, that he'll be able to get some coverage for his book off the back of my month-long run in 80-seater room.
But why revisit Judas now?
Well, it's weird because I thought initially what attracted me about the story was this. I was thinking about kind of hero worship and how you might feel let down by your idols. And I suppose partly that's being a Blair voter as well, and thinking about that idea of projecting your hopes onto someone and then being let down. But also then I started writing about the idea of a kind of political martyrdom. And what's really weird in between having finished the thing just before Christmas and doing it now is what's happened in Iraq and that whole feeling of how a death can inspire people or not, you know.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to your reviews as well. And joining us, Gareth McLean, TV editor of The Guardian and columnist with the Radio Times.
Hello.
Thank you for coming.
Not so.
Is Big Brother still the pulse of the nation?
Oh. Well, it's certainly a trend there in TV. I mean, at the moment, there is Celebrity Big Brother just now, and they're moving Jade into the house is certainly up the ante on that. But with celebrities, with Soap Star Superstar on ITV1 and Just the Two of Us, the talent show, talent in the loosest sense, of course, on BBC1, there's that trend among broadcasters to do these live event programmes because with the increase in personal video recorders like Sky Plus, where you can fast forward through the adverts, you can't do that with these shows. You have to watch them live, so they're very attractive to advertisers.
Well, we know that more people vote for the Big Brother house than they do actually vote in local elections, so it may be the pulse of the nation, but it shouldn't be.
Actually, we don't know that because you can multiple vote in Big Brother, and you can't do that in local elections.
Well, you can in America.
You can.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much indeed for coming for our first newspaper review of the year. We look forward to it very much in half an hour or so. We'll get the sense of the Sundays this morning now. Anne Widdecombe is a Conservative MP who's against hunting and in favour of employees wearing a crucifix if they choose at work. Gareth McLean is a features writer on The Guardian whose work also straddles the Radio Times with his soap and flannel column. And Stuart Lee is a comedian who co-wrote Jerry Springer the Opera and whose new play invites the audience to consider life from the position of Judas Iscariot. So let's turn there first. And Widdecombe, Geoffrey Archer in The Independent on Sunday, and also Stuart, your comments in a moment.
Well, I think the Archer one is interesting because I don't think it is about Judas Iscariot. I think it's largely about Geoffrey. I think that Geoffrey is looking at the situation of a pariah, somebody who's become a pariah, and the whole issue of forgiveness and rehabilitation and whether you can actually rewrite a character after the event. So I think it's going to be a very interesting book. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm reading it here. Judas was much misunderstood, says Geoffrey Archer.
I doubt that very much, actually. I mean, I think the facts are straightforward enough, so I doubt very much if he was misunderstood. I think the subtext is Geoffrey saying he's misunderstood, but I do look forward to it with genuine interest. I do look forward to it with genuine interest.
Stuart?
I think it's interesting that whenever anyone deals with historical characters in fiction, they're often really writing about themselves. And I think, yeah, it probably, Geoffrey Archer's someone like Judas, who's gone down in history as a bad person.
He's not quite like Judas, no.
He's not as bad, historically, I suppose. And he's trying to think, sort of, how do we change this story? But I think it's interesting that there's so many things you can do with the story of Judas. So many people approached it in different ways. My sort of take on it for the show that starts on Tuesday. And can I just say, I didn't imagine coming on to plug this in such an obvious way.
No,
it's
you're
weird
not.
That the news
will
we'll
ring a bell if you try that.
But was this kind of idea that Judas would be someone who invested a lot of trust and hope in Jesus, and then is kind of let down politically, which is exactly the Archer take on it. And it's great to be in such fantastic company.
I mean, I think one of the joys of writing about things that happened thousands of years ago is that you have so much established fact, and the rest is speculation and theory.
But what I am very
clear about is that I hope that Geoffrey doesn't do for the Judas story what Dan Brown did for the Mary Magdalene story, and get into the public consciousness a view that actually isn't sustained by the historical documents.
Right. Well, maybe historical documents, but isn't it all just stories? I mean, it's the Bible,
no.
Isn't it?
Well, in Acts of the Apostles, there's never any... they don't agree with each other. In Acts of the Apostles, it says that Judas didn't commit suicide, but his stomach exploded in a field. I mean, they don't tie in with each other.
I note in
well,
some...
what is absolutely consistent is that it was he who betrayed Christ. I mean, that is utterly consistent across the Gospels.
And I note in some of the coverage that the Pope is bringing out a book this year which might even address this as well.
I think it might be a little deeper than Geoffrey.
Right. Now, Gareth McLean.
Yes.
I want to turn to Scottish independence in The Observer.
Yes, well, once you've got over the shock of seeing a story about Scotland in the London papers, it's in The Observer by Ruairi Nicol, a piece about the sort of growing sort of interest in independence. And with the SNP at the elections in May, sort of a real threat to Labour, there's much excitement there, and in England too, I suppose, about the potential end of the union. So if the SNP get in, they'll have a referendum.
And what's this report saying today? Because we heard this come up. There was a poll both sides of the border a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
Well, it's just a really well-written, well-researched piece about the whole atmosphere up there and the frenzy down here among sort of opponents of the government and the potential for getting rid of Gordon Brown, I think, since as a Scottish MP, he would lose his seat if Scotland became independent. So it's just a real sort of measuring of the temperature and... you know, it's good to see it in the English papers, actually.
They're calling it torn asunder, Anne Widdecombe.
I think that there is a genuine grievance south of the border, actually, now about the influence that Scots have within our parliaments on issues that we have no influence whatever in theirs. So I think when you're talking about independence, you're not just talking about Scottish disaffection, you're also talking about English disaffection as well.
Well, I mean, there's a really exciting sort of spirit in Scotland at the moment. There's loads of going on, you know, there's a new National Theatre. It's really sort of, there's a real sort of buzz up there, and I think that there's a new confidence in Scotland, certainly. Mm. And, yeah, there might be grievances down here, but, you know...
Justified ones.
Can I just say, I went to the Shetlands on my honeymoon in December and there isn't a buzz up there.
There's very rarely a buzz in the Shetlands for
there's
anything.
There's no sense of excitement.
New sheep have arrived!
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your marriage.
Oh, thank you.
Now, let's stay with you, Stuart, if I may. You want to take us into the world of Kate Middleton... as reported by the Sunday Mirror.
Well, the Sunday Mirror says that Scotland Yard are calling the elite Royal Protection Squad that Kate Middleton's going to have Kate Squad. And I think this is too good a name to waste, and it should at very least be a reality television programme, or possibly a drama, an exciting Charlie's Angels-style drama in which Kate Middleton gets to send the Kate Middleton Protection Squad to solve various crimes, or perhaps a reality programme where the public could write in and ask... and suggest things that Kate Middleton's Kate Squad could solve. And I'd like
to
see that
great.
Happen.
They still have, like, matching handbags with a special gun compartment.
Yeah. So it's a wasted opportunity. But, and it would help make the money back as well if we could franchise that idea around the world.
Anne Widdecombe, MPs and a quiz in the Sunday Times. Now, I think we should all reach for us.
Yes, this is absolutely wonderful. You'll find it on page 10 of the Sunday Times. in which MPs with a particular interest in international affairs, so it's not just that they've gone to any old blogs, they've picked out MPs with a particular interest, the vast majority of them scored absolutely abysmally in a test about things like what is the difference between Sunnis and Shiites, and unbelievably couldn't actually name the president of Iran. Now, I thought everybody knew that because, of course, you remember Ahmadinejad by Ahmadinejacket, and I thought it was the most famous mnemonic currently going, and yet most of them failed on it.
Surprise, the MPs are stupid. Hey, there's one.
Surprise? No, it wasn't suggesting that they were stupid. I think there is a difference between stupidity and necessarily always being in possession of technical fact. But I am still quite surprised, actually, given the topicality of this, at the abysmal scores. I think it's funny, but it's also quite worrying.
Do you, as an MP, do you have to be nervous of being caught out? In election campaigns, it's the how much is a pint of milk question, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, and how much is a loaf of bread?
Which is going up, I assume.
You know, what is a chav and all this sort of stuff, which you get the whole time. But on the other hand, I mean, if you're confident in what you are doing and saying and putting forward, you don't worry about being caught out on other things. We cannot possibly be an expert on everything.
I was slightly disappointed when an MP knows who the Arctic Monkeys are or whatever, because I feel like they should be applying their knowledge to more important things and
like
understanding policy. Yeah, like Sunnis and Shiites. Like the fact that you would know what a chav is or whatever.
Yeah. I don't care if they know that or not.
Yeah, I mean, I know that. I want them to know other things.
Gareth McLean, the Sunday Times is looking at organic foods.
Yes, from a really unrevealing interview with David Miliband.
Are they in favour of organic foods?
Well, organic food may be no better for you than mass-produced farm food, according to the Cabinet Minister responsible for agriculture, David Miliband. So he said... he's actually been sort of caught out because he didn't want to say that the non-organic food is of secondary quality to organic food, so he couldn't say that organic food was better. So I suppose, but, you know, his success, the interview actually is so unrevealing. It's a real sort of missed opportunity, I think.
This is your typical political trap. I mean, the overwhelming majority of food, of course, is produced by non-organic means, and you're going to offend a huge number of commercial concerns if you say that organic is better. On the other hand, because all the recent health fads and fashions are in favour of organic, you're going to upset all the health people if you say organic isn't better. So he tried to find a form of weasel words, and he talked about there not being any conclusive evidence.
Well, what's interesting to me is that he says it's a lifestyle choice that people can make, and it is, to a certain extent, it's a lifestyle choice, because if you've got the money, you can afford to do that. But, you know, organic food is so much more expensive, and there's a whole sort of tranche of people who can't afford it.
Let's turn away then to the world of the arts in The Observer. Stuart, what have you picked there?
Well, there apparently some MPs are calling for the BNP voting ballerina Simone Clark to be removed from the Royal Ballet, and someone in the Arts Council has called the Royal Ballet a fascist organisation. I don't think the answer is to remove her, although obviously there is a terrible risk of alienating the mass of first and second generation immigrants that form the core of the Royal Ballet's audience. But I think that she should be encouraged to stay and perhaps find a way of expressing her views in the form of dance. Perhaps she could...
Can you ballet dance in jackboots?
No, she could be a spitfire, like in the BNP party political broadcasts or flying around. And her partner, Yat-Sen Cheng, could play a kind of illegal immigrant that she's trying to keep out. And maybe the BNP and the Royal Ballet should collaborate together, because there's a real dearth, I think, of polemical right-wing art. that's the place for them to do it.
I appreciate the humour, but actually I think this is very serious. I genuinely do. Because I think we are now increasingly living in a society in which your freedom to express your views is being steadily reduced. Now, I was growing up in the 1950s, and in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War, when we had shed blood to fight the Nazis. But there were still huge Nazi rallies in this country, and the police were there not to stop them, but to ensure that they could go ahead. When we were at the height of the Cold War, the same was true of the communists. You could stand for Parliament as a communist. You could express views, and it was left to social disapproval to go against you, not the heavy hand of the law and taking away people's jobs. I think this is serious. I don't actually think this is funny.
Well, on the story, before, I just think we should just point out, as it is raising temperatures, that it is the English National Ballet.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd just like to make that plain on the fact. So the argument will go on about that.
Why? I mean, she's not teaching a class of kids. She's dancing. Well, why does it matter what her political views are?
I think it's easy to understand people's anxieties, which is that you worry about how do you respond to a piece of art that you like when you feel it's being made by a person whose views you feel are abhorrent.
Okay, well, look, though that is the nature of the debate, I suppose. So, Gareth McLean, into the Mail on Sunday now. What have you found on the police files?
Yes, well, there's this sort of worryingly flammed up story. Police are keeping secret files on police accused of making anti-gay remarks, so which sounds very serious, and indeed, which is perhaps a threat to civil liberties, as Anne says. But then later on, it's a means of collating statistics for the Home Office, which, with a rise in sort of homophobic crime and all that, it's very, very important that we do that. But it's another example of a sort of insidious or not so insidious homophobia in the Mail.
So the report, well, but the paper would claim it's a report of its own. But what does it actually say, Gareth?
It says a former TV presenter who was arrested for inciting hatred but never charged has been put on this file. But presumably it's to collate statistics for the Home Office on a rise in homophobic remarks and crime.
Again, I think it is important that if somebody hasn't actually been convicted of a crime or even charged with a crime, that they nevertheless have a police file. And indeed, if you read on and read on the inside pages, that file is actually quite extensive.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of homophobia about.
Well, OK, the controversy about all of your stories will continue. I hope you'll all come back. Because I'm afraid we've got to the end, Anne Widdicombe, of the review. Thank you for coming. Also, Gareth McLean and Stuart Lee.